It is the Blue Jays Talk. Taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We will take the entire country with us to the bottom of the hour, and then from 10:30 Eastern until 11 o'clock, we are on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can hear us on sportsnet590.ca right now, all the way till the top of the hour. A big win for the Blue Jays after a big series win against the Tampa Bay Rays. And really, we haven't had a good Jays talk since Sunday. So get those calls and letters coming. Lots of stuff to enjoy about what's going on lately here for the Blue Jays. They've won 10 of 16. The long, slow climb back to 500 continues. They are now 20 and 27. Sam in Toronto, we're going to lead things off with you, listening on our flagship, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Hi there, Mike. Now, that was a heck of a game. I just want to start off by talking about Morrow, because it sounds a little ridiculous to say, but if there was ever a such thing as a 10-hit, 6-earned good outing, that was it. I think there was Morrow actually looked promising, particularly through the first six. Obviously the home runs were nasty, and he had a bit of trouble in the seventh, but all in all, I actually didn't think he looked that bad. But I got a couple real quick ones for you here. First off, I know Josh Johnson is making a rehab start this weekend. Is it safe to assume he should be back beginning to end of next week?
No, it's not. He may need two more rehab starts, and of course, you know, we don't know how this one's going to go. And whether he'll be setback free and all that stuff. But assuming that he gets through it healthy, I would think he's probably going to have one more before he comes back. But you never know. Many things that we are told, pretty much everything that we're told by the Blue Jays, is, of course, subject to change.
That's good to know. Yeah, sometimes it's like extracting information out of Fort Knox.
But, well, hey, they don't know either. You know what? As much as they love to say, yeah, we're definitely going to get him one more start, if he needs it, they'll also look at Saturday, and if he pitches exceedingly well, then why not bring him back?
That's good to know. And quickly, I just want to ask you, I just want to see what you have to say about really nice to see Lori and Aaron Sebia contributing, two guys who are struggling awful mighty lately, and particularly Lori. It appeared when he was swinging, he actually saw like a bit of a wobble in his swing each time. It was causing him to whiff a whole lot. Did you see anything, or did you talk to anybody tonight that looked different from him? Is he starting to get his groove back, or what do you think about that?
I think we may continue to see him being really, really busy at the plate. I mean, that just might be him from now on. I talked to Chad Mottola about it the other day, and it's on the Blue Jays This Week video podcast that you can find at sportsnet.ca and on YouTube. You should check that out on a weekly basis. Ben Ennis and I doing the Blue Jays This Week video podcast. We talked to Chad Mottola about that. He says he's not worried about any of the motion in Lori's setup as long as his head is still when the pitch is being delivered. So, you know, a broken bat single is great. A bunt single is terrific. I don't think either of those things are signs that someone's turning things around and things are starting to come around, but the four-pitch walk is helpful. And you know what? Maybe it's those little nothing, poor contact, getting a ball to fall in that gets you starting to turn around. Brett Lori is a much better hitter than this. We all know it. It's only a matter of time before he starts hitting. And J.P. Arencibia might just be heating up again. And when he gets on a hot streak, look out. He absolutely destroyed four balls tonight. So that's a really good sign for J.P.
Thanks a bunch, Mike. I appreciate it. And you have a good night.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate the call. Chris is in Waterloo. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. I wanted to ask you, first off, was that the first time you've gotten to call a grand slam on the radio?
I don't think so, and you would think that I would remember exactly. I don't think so. I have a feeling I got one last year.
Okay.
And it might have been Edwin also.
Yeah, that was that was amazing. Definitely the highlight of the game was listening to that.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a bit about Sean Nolan and if you could provide some insight into why he was the one who was called up. And the reason why I'm asking is the Jays have a pattern, it seems, in recent year of calling up pitchers very early, and it hasn't always worked out. And I'm thinking specifically of Kyle Drabek coming up and having a lot of composure problems, and Henderson Alvarez coming up before he really had developed a breaking pitch. I mean, I know Hutchison came up early and I think was fairly effective before he was hurt. But I'm wondering if that's something that, you know, to be concerned about.
I don't think it is. And I don't think Henderson Alvarez was up early either. I think he was ready for the major leagues, and we saw him throw some very, very good games without a big-time secondary pitch. I don't think Kyle Drabek came up early. Drabek worked his way through the Philly system and through the Blue Jays system and had a I think, the Eastern League Pitcher of the Year before getting a September call-up to the Blue Jays that year. He did have control issues his whole time here, and which may have had to do with the elbow injury, and but there were definite composure problems for sure. And Drew Hutchison was terrific prior to getting hurt. So I think that I don't agree that those guys, any of them, were I mean, Henderson Alvarez never had to go back down. We might have seen him go back down last year had the Blue Jays not been so beat up injury-wise. But for a 21-year-old, he was remarkably good. As far as Sean Nolan goes, Nolan has dominated Double A, I will grant you, in a very short stint at the end of last year and at the beginning of this year. But in six starts in Double A, he's got a 1.19 ERA, a 1.12 WHIP, and he struck out over 10 batters per nine innings. So he has been sensational. And he was sensational in 2012, the first half of the season, when he pitched in Dunedin, when he went 10-0 with a 2.04 ERA and a WHIP of 1.06 and more than a strikeout per inning. The Blue Jays actually considered giving him a September call-up last year. He's 23. He's a college guy. I don't think it's too early for him at all.
So is the thought process then there's nothing more for him to work on down there, so he should come up here, or...
Well, you never master it, right? I mean, I guess the thought process is if you're getting people out, you're not walking guys, and you're striking guys out, and you're looking good. I mean, the Blue Jays do a lot more than looking at, you know, hits and walks and strikeouts. And they have last year, Alex Anthopoulos told us about an 8-point grading system, and they talk about hard contact and long at-bats and those kinds of things. That's what they're looking for. And if you're a pitcher and you're preventing all that stuff from happening and you're grading out really high, then let's see up here and see what you can do.
Is there anything to be gained by going from AA to AAA pitching there? Is there an increase in the level of difficulty, or are the leagues fairly similar in
ability? Think, no, they're very different in that in AA you have more young kids on their way up. And in AAA, there are a lot of quadruple-A players, guys who have been in the major leagues and guys who, you know, the Andy LaRoches and Ryan Langerhanses of the world who are in Buffalo and guys that have been here and aren't quite good enough to play every day, but they're very good and maybe too good to be AAA guys. So it's an interesting and a different test if you move to AAA, but lots of teams bring their young players right up from AA with great success. And who knows? I mean, Jerry and Jack were talking about it. Who knows if Nolan's going to be here to stay or if he's going to be up for a couple of starts and then go back down. But the Blue Jays have determined that they really like what they see from him, and they're going to give him a shot.
Okay. Well, thanks for taking my call.
All right. I appreciate it. And hopefully we all enjoy it instead of wringing our hands about whether or not he came up too soon. And let's see what happens. We'll get to more of your phone calls on the other side, but first let's hear from John Gibbons. Here's what the skipper had to say about tonight's 12-6 win for the Blue Jays.
Gibby, if you guys are going to get back into this thing, how important is it for your big guys to be your big guys, like Batista was the day before and Eddie coming through tonight?
Well, I'd say, our team's built around those guys. You know, we think when it's all said and done this year, they're both going to have their big years like they always do. I'm talking about it. Batista and Eddie, you know. But, yeah, you know, the centerpieces of all good teams, the teams that win, you know, they got a couple guys there in the middle that they carry you. They really do. And then you got your, you know, your role players, guys to get on base for them. things like that. So yeah, that's definitely key. And they're both two of the better ones in the game.
Must have been encouraging to see after they cut the lead to 2 runs to bounce back like that. I mean, that's the stuff you weren't doing.
Yeah, he took the lead 3-0, and we chipped away, and then exploded there at the end. But we've been on a nice little bit of a roll. Playing some pretty good baseball, we really have. In Morrow tonight, he fell behind. He kept us in there. I think late in the game, he had a couple long half innings. Might have taken his toll on him, of course, and they hit the 2 home runs to put it back close. And then Cecil's did what he's been doing all year. He's been lights out for us. And when things get tense, Baltimore's got that quick strike offense because they can hit a lot of home runs. So Cecil came in there and got Davis and then, his 3 guys and stopped it right there, which is very important.
Is there anything going on with Darren right now? There's been a couple spots the last 2 games where it might have been his that you've gone to Loop and Cecil today.
Yeah, his shoulder's hanging a little bit. That's why he hasn't been in there lately. So we just got to kind of monitor that and see where he's at.
Is John Gibbons. Gibbons talking about tonight's 12-6 win. No Darren Oliver, but Brett Cecil and Brad Lincoln set down the 6 Orioles that the bullpen has to face in the Blue Jays. Get a 12-6 win. We'll come back. We will take a look at the scoreboard. It's little. And we'll set you up for Sean Nolan's Major League debut as we continue. It's the Honda Postgame Show on the Home Hardware Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays take down the Baltimore Orioles by a score of 12-6. Edwin Encarnacion with a grand slam. J.Pierre and Sebia 2-for-5 with a double and a homer, both on the first pitch, and 4 RBIs. Brandon Morrow gets a 2nd win of the season. I'm Mike Wilner, and we're filling in on the scoreboard real quickly. 3 games in the American League. Angels lead the Royals 5-2 in the bottom of the 8th. Twins and Scott Diamond of Guelph over Detroit, 6-3 in the top of the 7th. Indians beating up on the Red Sox, 12-3 bottom of the 8th. Terry Francona's first game back at Fenway since the Red Sox fired him. This afternoon, the Pirates beat the Cubs 4-2. Tomorrow night, Sean Nolan makes his Major League debut. The young lefty will face Baltimore's Chris Tillman, who is 3-2. We will be on at 7 o'clock Eastern for a 7:07 first pitch, so make sure you join us then. We are going to continue to Blue Jays talk it up all the way to the top of the hour on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. If you can't get that, listen on sportsnet590.ca or check out Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904 or your Rogers radio app. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware, homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Jack Morris, Tom Young, Brett Armstrong, and Joe Sicilia, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night from Toronto. Stroke to the belt, the 1-1 pitch. Swung on and belted. Left field and deep, hooking foul. It is gone! Off the foul pole! A grand slam for Edwin Encarnacion. His 13th. And he will step on the plate and give the Blue Jays an 8-3 lead. That ball was hit too hard to hook foul. It was headed that way, but the foul screen caught it. A grand slam for Edwin. Home run number 13 on the season, his 5th career grand slam, helped the Blue Jays to a 12-6 win over the Baltimore Orioles. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, and we're taking your phone calls at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. And right back to the phones we go. Joe is in Fredericton, New Brunswick, listening on Sportsnet590.ca. Hello, Joe.
Hello. Mike, what do you now see as the chances for the Jays to pick up a playoff spot this time?
They're not good by any means, but it's certainly not impossible. I mean, there's so much season left. I know it's hard to comprehend, but there are 115 games left in the season, and right now, and this will be the first time I've even looked at the wild card standings. Right now, the second wild card is held by the Detroit Tigers. So the Blue Jays are 7 games behind the Tigers, and they'll be 6 games behind the Tigers after tonight if the Twins can hold on to the 6-3 lead. So you got 6 games to make up with 115 games to play.
A ton of season left. That's I wanted to fly to Toronto for a series against Detroit in July.
Why
and
not?
I'm wondering if I'm on the fence.
Why?
And I want
are
to
you only
team.
Interested in watching the team if it's got a shot at a playoff spot?
Well, no, not at all. I'm just I'm on the fence. There are a ton of factors,
okay.
And that's besides the point, I guess. But that would be a great series to see if they're chasing. Well.
Detroit. Well, they'll be chasing. There's no question. They'll still be chasing by July. But look,
yeah.
If they can get to the 500 mark, even by the All-Star break, then they're fine. Because they've turned things around right now. They're playing much, much better over the last 16 games. Since that 10-21 start, they're 10-6, and they're doing things right. You know, they're not kicking the ball all over the field. They're not having these terrible at-bats. And when the other team scores 2 runs, the air's not let out completely of the balloon. They're playing the way we believe they would be playing. And all they have to do is keep that up, and they'll get themselves right back in it.
Yeah, it's feeling good now.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate the call. I know, whatever, they have a 3% chance of winning, but every win they get pushes that percentage up, and every winning streak changes everything. So you can't, I mean... They have a 3% chance because most teams that are 20-27 are bad teams, and they're going to stay bad. Look, the Detroit Tigers were 23-27 through 50 games last year. They wound up in the World Series. If you're a good team, you can scratch and claw your way back. And the Blue Jays are a good team, and they're only getting better. Josh Johnson's going to be back in a couple of weeks at least. Or if not sooner, Jose Reyes will be back in 6 weeks or so. I know a lot of people gave up hope on this team a long time ago, but really, there's no reason to do that. Just as though there was no reason when they were 27-14 a few years ago to start the season to believe that they were just going to roll through everything to win the World Series. Peter is in St. Catharines listening on our flagship, which is where we're on right now, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Mike. It's great thrill for you to call that grand slam.
It was a great thrill.
And the only thing left, have you called a walk-off win yet?
Yes, last year, Rajay Davis, I believe it was against the Phillies. It was against the Phillies.
Oh,
last year, I had that walk-off.
I wasn't sure if you were, because we were close. It could have happened yesterday with Batista, but...
It did happen yesterday.
Well, I know it did, but... I know that was Jerry calling it as only Jerry can.
Indeed.
Yes. I just want to ask about that game yesterday. Do we know why that game was scheduled for 4:30? And is there any specific reason? Because I think
apparently there's a rule that if a road team is playing the last game of a series and they're going home to an off day.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have that full off day at home, so it has to be a day game.
Oh, I see.
In the last game of that series. So I just found out about this today. So they could have done the 12:30 thing, and I think the Blue Jays wanted to see what would happen if they tried a later afternoon thing to get the business crowd coming.
Yeah, sure. I think that's something that the Blue Jays should consider in the future.
It made for an interesting day, I'll say that for sure.
Yeah, hopefully it didn't get the clock all screwed up on you. Did I hope for your sake, anyways.
Well, I think it got the clock all screwed up on everybody.
Yep.
But they won, so they'll take it for sure.
Sure, and I hope maybe they'll try that again in the future.
Yeah, you never know. I don't think they've ever lost a 4:37 start in the history of the franchise.
There you go. All right, hey, thanks a lot, Mike. Great job.
All right, Peter, appreciate it. Let's go to Kevin in Brampton. You're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hi, Mike. It was a fun game tonight. I just wanted to also say that it's nice to listen to your positive, upbeat attitude, even though I've been doing the greatest yet, but give them time. They're doing better and better.
I'm just a realist, little... that's all. A lot of people like to paint me as an optimist or positive or whatever. I'm not. I just understand that, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 games into the season, it's never all is lost.
Oh, exactly. Going back to 89, they were 12-24. At the end of 89, they ended up winning their division.
Yep.
My one question is, about a month and a bit ago, I heard that the mayor of Ottawa was chatting with the Jays about getting maybe a double A or triple A team there. I haven't heard a word about that. Do you know what became of that?
I had heard that last year, but then the Blue Jays re-upped with New Hampshire, and that was going to be the thing. I mean, the New Hampshire team was going to either be bought and moved to Ottawa, and somebody else was going to move into New Hampshire. Something was going to go on. Triple A is not going to happen. The Blue Jays are in Buffalo for a while, and I think for a long while. But there may, I haven't heard anything about it for a while either. I don't know if it's dead. But for now, yeah, there's nothing going on as far as the Blue Jays getting a minor league team in Ottawa.
Okay, yeah, I went to Buffalo a couple weeks ago. It was a lot of fun. I actually saw a ghost steal a home. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, you almost did that again today.
Yes. All right, well, thanks a lot then.
All right, thank you, Kevin. Appreciate the call. It would be very cool if the Blue Jays had a minor league team in Ottawa or in London. But I just don't know that that's in the cards. It's too bad. But minor league baseball in Canada, we gave it a great shot. There were a ton of teams in the late 80s and early 90s in Canada in the minor leagues, and now very, very few of them, none of them, have survived. You know, Vancouver is back, but as a short season team when it used to be a triple-A city. So it would be great. It would be great to see triple-A baseball in Montreal, in Ottawa, in Vancouver, though Vancouver Canadians are doing great in their Northwest short season league. We are taking your phone calls. Blue Jays take down the Orioles big time, 12-6. And we will Blue Jays talk it up right up till 11 o'clock. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. It is the Blue Jays talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. JPR Encebia has hit two balls hard today. He's 1-for-2 with a flyout and RBI double. And he crushes that ball. Left field, deep at the wall. It's gone! Home run number 11 for JPR Encebia. And the Blue Jays take a 4-3 lead. And that was the lead that the Blue Jays would never relinquish. Edwin Encarnacion with a grand slam an inning later to kind of put it away at 8-3, but the Orioles climbed back to 8-6 before the Jays tacked on four more in the eighth for a 12-6 win. Blue Jays have won 10 of their last 16 since starting the season at 10-21. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Lines are open. Let's Blue Jays talk it up. Back to the phones. Phil is in Toronto. You're listening to the Blue Jays Talk. The Blue Jays Talk is what it's called on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hello, Phil.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Thanks for calling.
So I'm wondering about Anthony Ghost. There was a lot of shock when he got called up, given how bad he was playing. Now it's only one game, but in his limited action tonight, he looked okay. Do you see him playing a major role in the season, or do you kind of think he's going to sort of just be a sort of stopgap in the meantime while they're low on bodies?
I think he's only here for the rest of the week, more than likely, or at least until Rajay Davis is ready to come off the DL. Rajay is eligible to return on Sunday,
right.
But I don't know how his progress is progressing. He seemed to be okay, and you know, it was more of a let's make sure kind of thing that got him on the DL. But Ghost started yesterday, had that double to lead off the game, scored a run. We've seen him. We know how much of a spark plug he can be. We know how much havoc he can wreak on the bases when he gets on, and we know that that he's a tremendous defensive player. And someday he's going to be a major, major, major part of this team. I believe that. But I don't think that day is now, and I think this is only a temporary thing, but you never know. We'll see. And if someone gets hurt, he's the first guy you call.
Do you think we might see him again at the end of the season if sort of we lose some bodies like we did last year? It's kind of come up for the past 2 months.
Well, yeah. Like I said, if someone gets hurt, he's the guy they call. And if nobody gets hurt and, you know, September rolls around, he's absolutely here as a September call-up. He's a he's almost the prototypical guy you want added to your bench in September, especially if you're in a race.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. Thank you. Dave in Vancouver, you're up next on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Mike, enjoyed your broadcast tonight, especially that grand slam, the salami. Fantastic. And, you know, and I'm just going to say that the name of the game has always been entertaining. So for the big smoke, it's good to see the Jays coming back because, I mean, it's been kind of a rough month. You know what I'm talking about. And, you know, people say 3%. Well, hey, I'll tell you right now. I mean, who would have thought the chance 1% of a hockey team having a three-goal lead in a Game 7 in the third period? Well, that happened. And I think, you know, the three big spenders. And let's think about this. I mean, the three big spenders, they spent the money trying to bring a winner for their city, and I'm referring, of course, to the Angels, the Dodgers, and the Jays. I think one of the three of them, who are all about 7 or 8 games under 500, one of them will make the playoffs. And, you know, you mentioned about how, as an example, the importance of ball players having speed, ghosts of being the classic case. And you mentioned Triple A. Well, we had it in Vancouver, of course. And I recall, well, going back almost 50 years now, a guy that learned how to switch hit down in Spokane, playing with the Dodger organization. And he went up to the majors, had all kinds of speed, learned how to bunt, you know, beat out the infield hits. Guy by the name of Maury Will. So all the ghosts can get, you know, better as a bunter, infield hits, and even hitting 260. That guy can be a terror in the league with that speed.
Yeah, he can. You know, he could bunt 350, I think.
No, yeah, well, that's one thing. So, and then the defense, you can't, you know, that's something you can't buy. I mean, the defense, that's an important part of this team and so on. And just one final question for you. I'm curious to know, just on the farm system, because people remind us that the only people that, you know, or an everyday player is Adam Lynn as a DH and Aaron Sebia. Are there some good young prospects coming up that are everyday players, say at the single or double A level? I'll be watching some of the kids when they're single A next month in Vancouver and so on. But I think that that's the one area that AA has to start drafting is, you know, restocking because we did make a lot of deals, restocking with everyday players. I'd like to get your opinion on that and who some of these kids are and so on.
Well, it would be nice if there was a second baseman waiting. And Jim Negrich is having a heck of a year in Buffalo, but he's not that young prospect. He's 28, 29 years old. And I'd love them to give him a shot if they can't figure something out between Bonifacio and Meister Stures. I don't know that they will. But as far as big-time position player prospects, I mean, I think of Blue Jays minor leaguers, and I think I think pitchers and they did make a lot of trades. I don't know if Jacob.
Because they had some on. I remember they had, and I think a couple. I know one went to Miami and so on. But I'm just kind of hoping that's where he goes. And then, you know, if we don't make the playoffs, well, then maybe we start leaning if we're a seller. We get a couple good prospects that are, you know, perhaps infields, like you say, a second baseman.
There have been a lot of deals for prospects, and I hope the Blue Jays are beyond this. I mean, he's a long way away, but there's DJ Davis. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the outfielder that they drafted first overall. AJ Jimenez is the catcher. Jacob Anderson is the guy whose name I was trying to come up with, and then you know, but a lot of these position players are in A ball and low A ball and a ways away, but you know what, they've got, they don't really have to go looking for anybody at the major league level for a while. They've got guys who are not old, and there are guys who are here for a while, and they're covered. They're not really looking for someone to take over at a lot of positions over the course of the next few years, and that's what these few years are for. And it's to rebuild the farm system. Thank you, Dave. I want to move on and get to as many people as we can before we go at the top of the hour. Mike is in Toronto. You're on the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Mike. Been watching the second base position pretty closely for this team. It's great that they're on the rebound, but, you know, I know Bonifacio was pretty touted coming over. I don't know if he has any options left. I don't know when Reyes is coming off the DL. Is it possible to move Kawasaki to second? But I'm telling you, you'll get more offense out of Kawasaki than you will from Bonifacio and Meister Stures.
I don't know. The major league track records would seem to speak in direct opposition to that.
I agree with you, but now is now, and that's what we're playing for, and he seems to be producing. Bonifacio is not, and I think he's a defensive liability from what I've seen.
I don't know the Kawasaki, and I'm getting a weird echo with you. I don't know if you got your radio up or what, but I don't know if Kawasaki is producing as much as you think he is. You know, he's only hitting about 220 right now. He's walking, which is sensational, and the on-base is definitely up there. Bonifacio seems to really have turned things around lately. Last time I checked, he was over 300 over the last couple of weeks, little while since the Blue Jays made him an everyday player. And when you look at what he's done in his career, especially given his age, just coming into his prime, this is a guy that you want to give a long look. You see his speed. All that stuff makes you really excited about what Emilio Bonifacio can do. And as much fun as Munenori Kawasaki is, and he is, this is a guy who's, you know, really not a hitter. He's been grinding out at bats, and he's been doing really well, and he's in the nine hole, and he's doing all those good things that you want from a guy at the bottom of your lineup. But I think Kawasaki and Meister, I mean, Meister Stewart is a 280 career hitter coming into this year. So, you know, you've seen them for one quarter of one season, and it's a little too early to write them off, and especially when you consider that, really, Kawasaki is not outdoing them as far as overall offensive numbers are concerned by nearly as much as you think. I mean, he's got, what, 30 points on Bonifacio in OPS, and that's with Emilio hitting under 200 for the first 6 weeks of the season. Jose Reyes isn't going to be back for at least another month, maybe a little longer, maybe not. I say we let that other month happen, and I've gotten the question about Kawasaki every day for the last 3 weeks when Reyes comes back and he moved to second. I have a feeling in a month people will feel very differently about Bonifacio and Asturias than they do right now. Rob in Brampton, you're up next on the Blue Jays Talk.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me on. I just want to say this, you know, I think that what people were talking about from the beginning of the season, there were really high expectations, and the team really does need time to gel. I've been to six games so far this season, been able to really, really watch the difference between April and even May. And my recent game I was at was on Monday against Tampa Bay. And to really watch these guys, they've really changed. They've really started to get into their own. You know, and they're not playing at the expectation they're expected to, but they're coming around and it's really showing. You know, even a guy like Adam Lind, I mean, he had that, was a 13 or 14 pitch at bat on Monday in the first inning alone. And the patience that he has, and, you know, those are the kind of changes and things we've been waiting for. And I agree with what you said about Kawasaki. He's an exciting guy, but again, he's really just a fill-in for Reyes until he comes back. And I think it's going to be, like you said, Bonifacio, Asturias, those are the guys that are going to be there. It's going to be thanks to Kawasaki. Maybe he'll be on the bench, or maybe he'll get sent back down. But, you know, I think this team, I really believe that it's going to be the second half. Once the All-Star break is done, and these guys are going to really be on a roll, I think, and really start taking command of the American League and start coming back. It may be too late, but at least they'll give the fans a lot of hope for next season, and they'll know each other and be, you know, in terms of in their own, and they'll be gelling, and they'll be knowing each other on the field, because it's like you said, you know, even regarding defense, second and third base and shortstop guys, if they're all new and they haven't played with each other for a while, they do have to get used to each other.
Yeah, I don't know if I believe that about baseball, honestly. I don't know if I believe that. I mean, it's a team game, but it's played by individuals. You should know where guys are going to be, and guys should know where they have to be, and it doesn't matter to me whether you've played with them before, but there are a lot of people who seem to believe that teams need time to gel. I don't understand why, but there may be something to that. Then again, the Blue Jays turned over half their roster between 92 and 93, and they didn't seem to skip a beat, although it did take them a while to get over 500 for good in 1993. But I don't think they're going to wait till the All-Star break to turn things around. I think they've already turned them around. And again, since May the 4th, and R.A. Dickey got roughed up that day by the Mariners. Since that day, the Blue Jays are playing at 101 win pace. We have seen none of those, you know, with the exception of one inning in New York, crazy bad baseball plays that just open floodgates and get you way behind the eight ball, and things really seem to be seem to be moving in the right direction. Jay in North York. Jay, you're going to be the last one on the Blue Jays talk. Make it good.
All right, Mike. I wanted to talk about Brandon Morrow. We've been listening to Brandon Morrow's stuff and how he's got great stuff and how he could possibly be a number one or a number two starter on any Major League Baseball team. And I listen to this, and I'm believing what I'm seeing with my eyes. Yes, he has great stuff. And I was there at that game when he got 19 strikeouts and Evan Longoria got the hit at the in the bottom of the ninth inning. And that was great. And I think we'll see some fantastic performances by Brandon Morrow occasionally. But he is what he is now. I don't know if it's been 3 or 4 years since the Brandon League trade and they brought him over from Seattle.
This is his fourth year, I think.
So 4 years, I don't know how many starts he's had, 60, 70, 80 between injuries. This is Brandon Morrow. I don't feel confident. I don't feel comfortable. And even tonight, the eighth inning, I see him come out of the dugout, which I would have put him in the game on a short string, and he gives up a home run, and I'm like, okay, that's it. Take him out. And the commentators are like, he's got good stuff. He's still throwing the... I'm like, you know what? This is Brandon Morrow. Let's just realize that he's an inconsistent guy who may not come to fruition, almost like we thought about A.J. Burnett several years ago. Great stuff. Never became a whole lot with the Expos. I don't really follow him in Pittsburgh now. Maybe he's doing better. I'm not sure. I want to know your thoughts on Morrow.
I just want to ask you, does last year not count?
Every year counts. But
okay.
You take a 3 or 4 year history, not a 6 month history or a 12 month history. It's however many starts he's had, you know?
Yeah, it is. And I see where you're coming from, but I think you're being overly negative in that. And I think that's just kind of the way that a lot of Blue Jays fans are. If you look at Brandon Morrow, when he got here in 2010, he had been royally screwed around by the Seattle Mariners for years, 4 years of development time. He had 10 crappy starts, and then he was great for the rest of the season. 2011, 10 crappy starts, then he was great for the rest of the season. Last year, he gave up one earned run or no earned runs in like more than two-thirds of his starts. He was outstanding. And this year, having a crappy start, 9 starts in. He's 28 years old. He's been a full-time starter for 4 years. I'm certainly not willing to write off Brandon Morrow quite yet. That's it for us. Thanks for all the calls. We'll see you tomorrow. Sean Nolan's Big League debut.